This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You've reached another Joy 94.9 podcast.
The hottest event on the LGBTIQ calendar is the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras.
And this way it is through Joy.
Thanks to our Joy sponsors, Virgin Australia, who'll fly you there, Airbnb, who'll put you up for your stay, and GoGet, who'll drive you around in style.
Then have the time of your life celebrating the Mardi Gras Parade with a view money can't buy at the Joy 94.9 VIP broadcast.
An unforgettable experience you don't want to miss.
For a chance to win, donate $5 to Joy via joy.org.au.
Enter as many times as you like. There's no limits.
The more times you donate $5, the more chances you have to win.
But do it before Feb 17.
T's and C's apply. See joy.org.au.
The joy of summer.
The joy of Mardi Gras.
Joy 94.9.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
And our guest is Greg Barber, the leader of the Greens in the Victorian Parliament. Welcome, Greg.
G'day, mate. First time in the Joy FM studio. So
I know.
Thanks for having me.
It is, and you're only just up the road.
It's good to have you here. It's good to have you here.
So, Tass, you had a question for Greg to kick off, didn't you?
Well, look, during the break there, we were actually talking about Q Society, and
yeah.
And I know that's not quite on our script at this stage.
We can all have a read.
But I would be interested in your thoughts on Q Society, and it sort of has come out of the blue, really, hasn't it? There hasn't been a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, look, I was thinking about it last night, and I woke up this morning thinking about it again, and it's part of a new. It's a new type of politics we're experiencing now, which is a politics driven by hatred. But it's not just hatred as a method, it's hatred as an outcome, where politicians like Pauline Hanson and Danny Nalia and Corey Bernardi want to basically make everybody hate everybody else and then somehow sort of rule over that. And that's their measure of success. Now, I could come in here and talk about what we did in Spring Street last week. We got a ban on gas fracking. We got a better price on your solar panels. But that form of politics is something that I'm going to be dealing with as a leader for years to come. And certainly as I think about the run-up to the next 2 years, to the state election, probably a federal election as well, how to deal with that and what to do about it is something that's on my mind all the time.
Greg, though, you'd have to admit that, I mean, things like the Q Society and the various politicians you mentioned, they haven't just sprung out of nowhere. I mean, there is a well of discontent out there and, you know, in the suburbs and whatever. People, they feel angry at what they call establishment politicians. They feel that they've been left behind. So I'm not sure we can just blame a Corey Bernardi, a Pauline Hanson, a Ross Cameron, who's one of the people at the Q Society, a Larry Pickering, because those groups wouldn't exist unless there was some level of support for them. And, I mean, the fact that Donald Trump has been elected the president of the US is an example of that. What do you think you do? How do you adjust your political approach, given that there is a lot of support out there?
Sorry, and if I could also say, Greg, you know, on the right we're seeing these. I mean, the Greens are a result of dissatisfaction on the left of centre. So, you know, what we're now seeing is more, you know, the ones particularly on the right, getting a lot of traction. I think they're spinning their wheels a bit, but they're getting traction.
Well, I've heard that analysis, what you guys just said, now for months and months and years and years and years. And that's the bit that I don't agree with, actually. I don't think that hatred was out there and these people just harnessed it. I think they're out there creating hatred. Now, I'll give you for instance. I grew up in outer suburban Sydney in a pretty rough suburb. Didn't know it was rough at the time because when you're a kid, everything around you just seems like normal. That's the way the world is. We had no Asian kids in our school. We had one Greek family, I think. And then 30 years later, you turn on the TV and you see those same group of blokes bashing up Lebanese on Cronulla Beach.
Mm.
Right? They're simply ignorant. That level of hatred can only flourish when people just simply haven't been exposed to the people that they're now attacking. And so the cure for that ignorance is actually education. It's putting diversity out there. That's why Joy FM exists where it couldn't have existed many, many years ago. And it's the same with all the other groups that the Q Society were ticking off for hatred. Women, gays, Muslims. That might be very handy shorthand for what Pauline Hanson wants to push, but there is a cure for it, and that's what is going to take up a large amount of my time over coming years. Another example I just thought of. When that young bloke attacked a couple of police and was shot dead down at Endeavour Hills a couple of years back, Newman Hayter, I think his name was, within pretty short order, Matthew Guy and Dennis Napthine, the then Premier, turned up to the Hallam Mosque, where that young guy had been frequenting, and they were there to say, this is not on you, we're with you, you're part of our community, and we're going to make that very symbolic and very clear. That was a good move by those guys. Mm-hmm. The Liberals, I think, now are seriously considering going the Hanson way.
Oh, I think, Greg, that's going a bit far. I mean, the Liberals, they've just had a Corey Bernardi resign from the party because presumably he thought it was not nearly right-wing enough for him. I mean, to say that the whole one of the two big parties in Australian politics is going down the Hanson route. But last time Pauline Hanson was big in the 90s, I mean, John Howard spent the best part of 2 years trying to get rid of her in politics and back then
succeeded. And adopting her policies was one of the ways he did it.
Well, I think you'll find that the Labor Party has pretty much the same policies. That's the thing. So you can be very selective about those things.
You're trying to get an argument about, I'm not here to save the Labor Party from itself. That's why we started the Green Party.
Okay, but you started the Greens Party. You know, there used to be just a left and a right, and there was Labor sort of centre-left and the Liberals centre-right, and that was pretty much all the choice you had. Now you've got Greens on the right wing, you've got One Nation and whatever. I just think we're seeing a splintering of parties, and you can't get upset about that there's a parties you don't like on one side of politics without accepting that there's lots of other parties on the other side of politics popping up too. And yours is one of them. And you do very well at it.
Oh, it's absolutely right that there is now a fragmentation of politics into a whole number of small parties. But, you know, years ago I would have been here arguing that the two-party system couldn't last, and other people would say, oh, the Greens are an aberration. Law of political gravity, what goes up must come down, right? But now the two-party system, you're not even arguing with me that the two-party system's had it.
It's interesting. I look at politics a bit like the car market. 10 years ago, there were cars that held, on their own models, 5 and 6%. Mm. Now, it's very, very hard to get a single model that sells over 3%, so you've got a fragmentation, and politics is the same. You look back in history and you could always rely on 80 to 85% of the population to vote Labor or Coalition. Now, those two parties are scratching to get much above 65%.
A bit over a third of the vote's a good day for them.
Between them.
Each.
Greg, I want to ask, Tom and I and Tass discussed it earlier, Crown Casino, the huge tower down there, I don't get it. I know Dick Wynne well, and I know he's, you know, he's made this decision, thought about it a lot. I don't want it. I don't want an expansion of the casino. If I had my eye, I'd shut the bloody thing down.
Greg?
I think it's a blot on the landscape.
I just want to plan for Melbourne, you know. We're getting huge inner city growth these days in apartments, docklands, Fisherman's Bend. Even the old city of Yarra, where I used to be mayor, has probably added about 25,000 residents since I left as mayor. But we're not adding parks, we're not adding enough trams, we're not building the schools. You can barely even walk down the street in the CBD. Mm. I used to come into Melbourne when I was a kid on a Saturday, and I was like Charlton Heston and the Omega Man.
Yes.
You know, like post-zombie apocalypse. There were so few people on Bourke Street on a Saturday. But now you can barely even get a seat on a tram to come in.
Well, I think, though, we broadcast at AW in Docklands, and so I find myself occasionally going around there. And I'll say in the last few years that you can sense it's starting to change. They've made an effort to put in a few more green spaces. There's a few, you know, cafes and things like that at street level.
Are you talking about Docklands?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, no. He's talking up Docklands. Oh, good on.
No. I have never liked it, but I've just noticed, and if I drive there to drive out, it is getting, I'm just saying, I think it's getting better.
Tom. It used to be like.
It's a wasteland, Tom.
No, it is getting better.
You used to spend some time there. It's actually
I do.
It used to be like you'd set a Paul Verhoeven movie down
yes.
there, you know, post-apocalyptic. But now it's getting better, and, you know, you've got to give the Greens on Melbourne City Council a bit of credit. We pushed that for about four
times.
Well,
what about Fisherman's Bend, though? Because Fisherman's Bend is still the blank canvas.
Well, it's going to be worse, actually.
Will it just be like South Bank?
Well, the lack of planning and regulation around that. I mean, the fact that government now have to go in there and buy land for a park because it's all been zoned off and planned off. It's going to be hideous.
The other thing I do wonder is, I mean, all these apartments going up, I'm still yet to meet many local residents who say, I want to live there. Someone must live there.
Where are the people coming from?
What are you saying, Tom? What are you saying?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, I do know that I know property developers, and a lot of them, they build these buildings, and it's all for the overseas market. It's all for mainly Chinese buyers who want to come in. And I feel that that's fine, but it's not building the city for the people who live here.
Can I change the subject?
Mm.
Greg,
quick
back
sticks.
To you
Why
again.
Why are you putting your hand in the air?
Well, that's what we do. Greg,
you know that's banned in classrooms now?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because teachers, you're not supposed to answer the kid who always puts his hand in the air. You're supposed to pick them out. You know, the ones who aren't answering the questions are the ones you should make answer the questions.
Right. Well, Greg is our guest for this session, so I'm a bit interested in what's happening in New South Wales at the moment and this faction that's sort of busting out of the Greens. Can you talk to us about that? What is actually going on?
Well, I'm not on the ground, so I can't really tell you. All I've seen is a couple of dudes with a Facebook group.
Well, you are the leader of the Greens for Victoria.
In Victoria, and that's my turf, you know. I've got all these day-to-day concerns about trams and you know, whether there's enough electricity to keep the lights on.
But aren't you a bit like a coalition where the leaders get together and sort of work on a national approach?
I do visit my good friends in Sydney from time to time to talk about national issues. I suppose I'd say this morning's paper is talking about it, and someone is saying that the Greens have to question whether they want to be a movement or whether they want to be a party that's in government. And I say we've never questioned that, actually. Certainly not in Victoria. We've known from the beginning that our aim was to increase our vote, win seats, eventually get into balance of power, and then participate in government. We've done it before in the ACT in Tasmania. We've got 29 Green councillors in Victoria who are probably managing collectively about $1 billion and massive and very important government services, from rubbish bins to maternal and child health nurses. So that's never been a question in my mind. Do we want to be in government or don't we? We absolutely do. Your Pauline Hansons, your Corey Bernardis, I suspect they don't. They want to influence things from the outside and mainly with that megaphone.
But Greg, okay, you said you've been up to Sydney. The head of Left Renewal, which is the faction that Taz mentioned, is allegedly led by Lee Rhiannon. Now, I've spoken with her a number of times. Did you speak to Lee Rhiannon on your recent trip to Sydney?
No, I met the state colleagues talking about state issues. And
So you did not talk to Lee Rhiannon?
Not recently, but as I say, that's all that federal stuff, that's above my pay scale these days. But if you want to get Dr. Di Natale in here...
I've asked him about it as well. he says there are no factions in our party, and then he said people who support the Left Renewal should leave the party. They were his words.
Well, that's the way we set up the Greens from the beginning. I mean, we had the experience of how... I'm talking 25 years ago now, how... Peter Garrett and his nuclear disarmament party got taken over. We could see what was going on with the Democrats. We'd seen that Labor at that point was starting to disintegrate. So we were clear from the beginning we weren't going to operate like that. And in many ways, the Greens constitution doesn't really allow those blocks to form and then just sort of, you know, vote like little sort of armies. So I think that's probably what Richard's talking about. But in Victoria, I don't think it's really a question.
This whole objective to actually win seats, is that not risking your underlying values and your core constituency?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think the reason the vote's fragmenting, the reason so many people have become vote swingers, which 20 years ago they weren't,
including Greens,
is we've got a bit of churn within our voting base as well. But probably right now we've got a stronger core vote in percentage terms than even Labor and Liberal, although we're of course a much smaller party. It's values and people sticking to their values that people want to see. So I've never really had a problem with voting in Parliament according to the values of the Greens. Now we'll work for an outcome. We're pragmatic in a sense. As if there's a good outcome on the table, you grab that outcome, you lock it in, and then you go for what your real policy is. And Bob Brown has always been like that. If there was something that could be done, he'd get it done, because that's what builds your success to the next one. But it doesn't mean you've given up on your vision or you've sold out on that. You're just working one Parliament at a time.
I know you profess complete ignorance of any federal matters, but the seat of Higgins always comes up in federal elections as being one of the mainstream blue ribbon seats that the Greens could take at a future federal election. Are you aiming, or is the federal party aiming to do that by the next federal election in the next couple of years?
Well, I think the state election will be before the federal election. That's my view.
Maybe.
Well, with Turnbull so far behind in the polls, in a way he's safe. Because nobody wants his job.
Unless there's a by-election.
Right. So I reckon state could still very well be before federal. And in that election, you're going to see a lot of action south of the river. Mm. And you're going to see us probably trying to win as many votes off the Libs as we are off Labor, targeting seats both north and south of the river and city and country.
So which seats will you target?
Well, in the upper house, we've got a chance in every seat. At the moment, we have the five metropolitan seats, the suburban ones, but we don't have a country upper house MP. And we came pretty close last time in one of those, so I'm sure we'll be out there again. And I'll take any excuse to get out of Melbourne, get on the V line and, you know, head off to the Grampians or the North East or whatever.
We mentioned Richard Wynne before, the planning minister. He's the member for Richmond, I think. Richmond, surely you'd be having another crack at that.
Yeah, well, there's only about 1,000 votes in it. Mm. Same thing in Brunswick.
I'll leave Jane alone. Jane.
Well, Northcote, a couple of thousand votes. But really, Dan Andrews, after election night counting had finished, was really only three seats and a few thousand votes from sharing lower house power with the Greens. Mm. So you don't have to be a genius to work out what our election strategy is going to be.
And we've seen the landscape. You look at a seat like Melbourne Ports, for example. You look at the state seat of Albert Park, how the demographic has changed there. I'm interested, you know, those seats that you would, I think it's reasonable to say, let's say they're a little bit left of centre, they're not. But do you see a chance in seats that are not left of centre? You know, something, you know, like you won Paran, but another state seat that's been, you know, let's say a fairly safe Liberal seat.
Hawthorne.
Some opportunity. Yeah, Hawthorne.
Yeah, our voting base traditionally has been managers and professionals.
Yeah.
And the big issues that drove our vote over the last 20 years were, number one, the environment. Number two, justice, equality, treating people as having a fundamental set of rights that you just can't take away from them or override them because they happen to be a member of a minority and you're the majority and you've got the votes. And more recently, questions such as asylum seekers. Those have been the big issues that have driven our vote. And we know that left and right, and in many of these seats, they are strong drivers of people's voting choice.
Yeah. Greg, we are going to run out of time. Sorry about that. We'd love to have you back again.
As a regular, perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, mate, every Saturday morning.
Break. Oh, no, we...
After 10:30, please.
There are other parties, and you're going to be followed a little bit later by Michael Kroger, so you see we... And in the first hour, I've been called a fascist, not this show, and in the second hour...
By whom?
A communist. So if in the first hour, I'm either a mad lefty or a fascist, and in the second hour, it's a reverse.
Michael Kroger's going to talk a lot about the Greens, but his agenda's to do over the National Party, and that's what's really behind what he's talking about.
Well, the Nationals, you can love the sheep, but not the shepherd. You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Thank you, Greg Barber, leader of the Greens in Victoria.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.